Good afternoon, everyone. My name is Shade. I'm from Nigeria, University of Ibadan, and I'd like to talk to you today on land use impact on soil greenhouse and soil carbon stocks. All of us are well aware of the problems that are happening around our world because of global warming, and that's one reason why all of us are gathered in this study. This is just a picture of a friend and a colleague, just to show you the impact of climate change. I'd like to start by just giving a brief background of the problem. We all know climate change, we have issues with it. Between 1992 and 2014, that's about two decades ago, there has been increase on energy use and some of these other factors, land use, and we can see that basically it means that we keep using energy, and that means that we keep having more greenhouse gases going into the atmosphere from fossil fuel and from different land use impact. Also, greenhouse gases too have increased within that same range. We have a challenge basically in Africa because we have huge land use change, which is the greatest form of carbon release into the atmosphere from increases in population, urbanization, basically from commercial agriculture, and for estates. Somewhere like Kenya, you find a lot of coffee and tea plantations being converted into real estate, and that's a huge impact. So deforestation and all the other things that we do cause this issue. So we need the solution, and like people have spoken in the past in presentations, carbon storage in soil is a good avenue for storing carbon and reducing how much greenhouse gases gets into the atmosphere. But for Africa, we have limitation, and this limitation is insufficient data to be able to say this is what we actually have in the soils at the different levels, at different horizons, and what we're giving off into the atmosphere. Why do we need data? We need data because we must inform policy. If policymakers must take soil seriously, then we must have data, the evidence to convince them. And it's unlikely that several countries will be asked to report, you know, their carbon stocks to IPCC in the future. So we need to start collecting our data. And if we must actually make cases for funding and modeling and monitoring soil carbon stocks, then this is the time to begin. It's time to get all our acts together in Africa and put our stuff in place. So that is the reason I'm doing this work. I just want to ask a few questions. That's some of the questions I had to ask myself. As in soil carbon stocks in Africa, are they actually growing or reducing under different land uses? What are their horizontal and vertical dimensions in the soil profile? And the last question is to estimate greenhouse gases from the sites that I have been using. Well, for the last one, I am doing that, but I don't have the results here to present to you. So my basic objectives for this particular talk is to quantify soil carbon in stocks or fractions, and also to evaluate the changes of land use on soil carbon stocks. I actually went to two different forest reserves, and the reason for collecting soils in two different forest reserves in Nigeria is because rapid land use changes in Africa, like I said earlier on, is a huge threat. And so if I must have sites where there can be continuous monitoring, then forest reserves are very important for collecting this data because of government restrictions. So people won't go in there and just change the land use rapidly. We hope that in the future we'll still find these land uses on ground, and we would continue monitoring the carbon stocks. So land uses were teak plantation. Teak is a very important tree to the economy of Africa, and of course globally. It is one of the most important trees for the log and for furniture. It's also used as because it's just like a straight tree. It doesn't really have several branches. It's actually used as pole for putting up the cables for electricity. And then I had to look for a natural forest within the same environment to collect soils that can serve as a reference, because issues with data from past is very difficult. People have worked generally on these sites, at this site, but the depths of collection of soils are very different, and usually people restrict it to the surface, 0 to 10 or 0 to 20. At most, they get to 30 or 45, and so it actually doesn't fit into what I was doing, so I can't really compare their results with what I have at the moment. That's why I had to collect soils also from natural forest and then an arable land. And cassava is a very important crop for us. At the time I was collecting my data, maize was just at a very tender age, and so basically I couldn't go destroying their farms. I had to go to the cassava farm, and the cassava farms were just about 1 year. That means that they had just been converted from one other land use into arable. These are some of the soils. My soil profile depth was 1 meter, and I had to look at alfisol and inceptisols, because those are the two soil types that are found in the site. And I wanted to look at how carbon is sequestered or stored in each of these different soil types. Some are resilient and some are more vulnerable. So basically we need to look at the different carbon stocks. The carbon stocks was calculated, and like I said earlier on, I was also wanted to look at those fractions. And the reason for looking at fractions of carbon is simply because we don't get to see change from total carbon easily. So we need to look at the fractions in order to basically monitor the changes over time. I don't know, I hope that is not so legible. Please pardon me for that. These are the results for the soil carbon concentrations. I won't really dwell so much on this, because basically I'm supposed to be talking about carbon stocks. I just wanted to show you how it is in the soil profile. Basically, at the top 5 centimeters, that is what makes a significant difference. So that means that we have a very shallow organic carbon layer in all of the different land uses, and even the soil, the different soils. If you look at the graphs at 15 centimeters, that's where you find actually the boundary between higher carbon to lower carbon in the depth. So if we do anything that disturbs the soil beyond 15 centimeters, then that means that we might actually be inverting the soil and bringing up soils that are less in carbon, and that will affect how much carbon is in the soil and how much carbon ultimately, is available for plant growth, particularly for the arable farm. And the same also for the inceptisol, the same pattern, so I won't really dwell on it. This is where I would like to look a little bit at. I've looked at the contributions. These are percentage contributions of the different carbon fractions, and I'm actually just looking at labor carbon. Labor carbon contributed most at the lower soil depth. That's where you have more of the labor carbon, and basically that means that there is some movement down the soil profile. Although this amount of labor carbon is still very small, yet we have a higher labor carbon. It is opposed to some literature where you expect to see more of non-hydrolyzable carbon, which is equated to the recalcitrant carbon at the lower depth, but here we find that there are more. That means that, and this probably has to do with texture, I have not brought in that result. In the at the first site, which is the Unigambari, it is a thick plantation that has more of labor carbon, but then the other site has natural forest, which is just obvious to know, because the more carbon, the more labor fractions you have. So carbon fraction, soil carbon stocks. Looking at the soil carbon stocks, which is what is very, very important to me, natural forest basically has the highest component in soil carbon stocks. That is no news. But what we see from the results here is that teak plantation, which is basically more of trees that have been there over several years, are not storing as much carbon as under the arable. Remember I said arable was just 1 year old at both sites. So basically they have just been converted from a different land use. So their carbon concentrations might be a little bit similar to that of natural forest. But it's very important to note that teak plantation, even though it's a very important tree for economic reasons, it is not really sequestering as much carbon or storing as much carbon in the soil as might be expected for trees. So that tells me something, that even with that, we still need some, you know, teak plantation is a monoculture kind of, so basically we need some, probably some growth of other shrubs associated or together with this in other to make sure that there's sufficient sequestration. One other thing about teak is this, it has a lot of litter, and every year, from information I gathered when I went to collect my samples, every year there's always a fire that goes through it, unintentional burning. It happens and it goes through the several hectares. So basically it keeps burning and burning all the time. So you don't have sufficient fuel. You might have sufficient litter, but it doesn't, you know, stay for a long time before you get before it gets mixed up in the soil. I tried to look at this carbon stocks with reference to IPCC reference depth, which is 0 to 30, and looking at the first, that's figure 7, you see that it's only a natural forest in one site that shows a little bit higher than the IPCC reference, which is about 47 milligram per hectare. And so basically it means that we need to increase the amount of carbon stocks that we have in our soils. I also decided to look at the relative change. Now, I'm using natural forest as a reference, and basically it shows that our land users have reduced the carbon stocks. It's very, very low with the inceptisol under arable here, basically, but there has been a change. That means that we need to begin to think about how to increase, you know, the amount of litter on the soil, and also increase our carbon stocks for Africa. So what are my conclusions? From our objectives, I set out to find out how much carbon stocks I was able to achieve. That I have carbon stocks for the different layers of soil and for these sites, which I hope they won't be taken over by other different land uses in the near future. So basically there can be continuous monitoring, and so we can also report our data to IPCC or governing global bodies that require such. Labor carbon, like I said, contributed higher, and we know how, so we can also monitor the changes in carbon in our soils. And then land use change in teak plantation was very significant, a reduction. We need to begin to think about policy on how to mix, you know, the plantations using other maybe trees that must sequester more carbon. And then we are still below the IPCC for the different land use. So basically we need to be able to tell policymakers, landowners, and even the scientific world, there's a need for storage for carbon stocks. I haven't looked at all the data for my greenhouse gases. I'm still working on them, that's why I'm not presenting it here. But basically, I'm sure there'll be a relationship between how much carbon stocks and the greenhouse gases that actually emitted from our soils. So I want to say thank you for listening and also acknowledge my sponsors. I'm grateful. Thanks.